This machine had the battery to go dead Friday night. I hope it was changed. Good. Well, let me say to begin with that I do appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this evening. Of course, Joe was planning on being away, and then circumstances were such that he had to leave a little bit early and under difficult circumstances. We trust that things will be well with him. Always good to have the opportunity to speak concerning God's Word. And I want to talk with you this evening about a lesson that I believe to be of the greatest of importance. It's a lesson that actually the title of the lesson is just a lesson or a term that we hear so frequently in the day in which we live. But I believe a misunderstood term. We hear people just about everywhere you go talking about trust in certain things. People want an automobile that they can trust. They want various individuals with whom they have relationships to be able to trust those individuals. And as people talk so much about the need for trusting, do we really understand what's involved in it? You'll hear someone, perhaps as he's trying to pull something on another person, he says, "You can trust me." You hear some of these fellows on TV, maybe some of the lawyers that are looking for people to provide them a case. "Well, you can trust me. If you have problems getting your disability, you can trust me." We're not naming any particular lawyers, but you know the ones that we're talking about. And on the story goes, in the business world, people want to give the impression that here's a businessman or a business organization that you can trust. No one wants to buy a used car from a fellow that would get up and say, you can trust me, would you?" We won't talk about that. I remember I got in trouble one time by mentioning used car salesmen. I wasn't aware of it, but there was one, a former used car salesman in the audience, and there may be one tonight. And I made sure that I noted there that in a survey that had been done just shortly before that time, that of all the people that had been interviewed, the people that they said were least trusted were used car salesmen. And I said, don't take offense at that, because only the third down the line was preachers. Well, that fella, when he heard used car salesman, he just closed his ears and he didn't hear the preacher part of it. And he really got upset. But people want someone that they can trust. Government officials. We live in a day in which the confidence, the trust that the people in this country have of those that are serving in the government, whether it's local, state, or federal, they have less confidence than at any other period of time. You may hear the fact referred to that Congress has one of the lowest approval ratings that all the past Congresses have had. And political leaders, or those who want to be political leaders. I was noticing, I guess it was last night, those that are wanting to be elected as the first person, so far as our government is concerned, neither one of the ones of the major political parties, people and trust them enough to at least say that they would vote for them. I wonder why people that they say have no confidence in them, and yet they will turn around and vote for those people. There must be some other reason that they would vote for them. In family relationships, the matter of trust is of critical importance. Husbands and wives need to be able to trust one another. In the Old Testament, in the book of Proverbs, in the 31st chapter, the writer there is discussing the characteristics of a woman that is referred to as that godly woman, a woman whose price is far above rubies. And one of the things that he has to say about this one in verse 11 of chapter 31 is that the heart of her husband safely trusts in her. She shall do him good all the days of his life. Now, there, whether he's talking about, as some would suggest, as it has to do with financial matters. But there are certainly other areas of life wherein the matter of being able to trust that person. Sometimes the expression is made, a woman can throw out more out of the back door than a man can shovel in the front. That man, in that kind of a situation, can't trust her husband, or can't trust his wife, that way there. That confidence that they're in a relationship where it should be what is one belongs to the other as well, and that one would not betray that kind of confidence. But being able to trust one another so far as the commitment that is made one toward another. I heard not long ago there was something on TV about where a good number of people that had been surveyed in this country, women, said that there's no way that they could trust their husband just anything that he said. That though they might say, yes, I believe you, they really, deep down, didn't do that. Well, why? Because that husband had proven that he couldn't be trusted. And the same thing is noted too in reverse, that the wife, so many times, cannot be trusted in the relationship that they are supposed to have. Parents and children need to be able to trust one another. I realize that many times a young person, maybe when he wants to do some particular thing, or if he wants to get the car before he's old enough to have one of his own, and he goes to his parents and says, well, you can trust me. It may be you can trust me to be back home at a certain time, and things of this nature. Well, it's not a matter of trust in every situation. There were occasions when our boys were growing up that it wasn't a matter of whether we trusted or not. It was just a matter that the thing that was under consideration wasn't something that they needed to be doing. Or it might just be the particular circumstance at the time that it wasn't something that we thought was the wise thing for them to be doing. But that kind of relationship needs to be developed. And trust is built upon an individual conducting himself in such a way as to prove that he's faithful, that he does what he says he will do, that he will be there, and these other expressions that are used. And a child needs to understand that's the place of a parent. I was talking with Alan a while last night, and he was always asked what songs to lead before I do a lesson. And I was talking with him about what I was going to be discussing. And I said, you know, I have read for many years. I don't know, it may change now. But for many years I have read that doctors say that there are only two things that a newborn child fears when he comes into this world. You know what they might be? One of them is the fear of a sudden and loud noise. The other is the fear of falling. Now, all the other fears that a child has are those fears that he learns from people round about him or learns by perhaps experiencing various situations. Child gets burned or something like that, and he learns to fear that whatever caused the burn. But the loud noise and the fear of falling. I well remember back a few years ago when our youngest, our oldest grandchild, only two of them, our oldest grandchild was born. Her dad and I went into the nursery part of the hospital there where they were keeping her. And I've forgotten now which it was, whether I did this or whether he did. But one of us reached down and touched her hand with the finger. What happens? Immediately, she grabbed onto it. And that's the way for many years doctors have tested the reflexes of a newborn child to see that it would respond in certain ways. And that is connected with this matter, as we said a few minutes ago, of falling. Well, there's that need as expressed by the grasping of the finger. The need for security, something that we can trust in. Now, we may talk about security from various ways or different areas of life. But trust is one of those things that is just the basic thing in our life. Well, we could go on and talk about many other things, about trust in general and the way we live. But I want to talk with you about this matter of trust as it involves our relationship with God. The lessons that are presented on Sunday morning and Wednesday nights and the Bible class study here for the last few weeks, at least on Wednesday night, I don't know what I've done on Sunday morning, but they've been emphasizing the trust that a person is to have for God in some of the things that are the result of that trust. The psalmist talks so often about the trust that he has in God. Man needs to be able to trust. And as we think about this matter of how we learn to trust in various situations in life, people learn various ones that they can trust or various things that they can trust in life. I read an illustration back some time ago that points out this particular matter. Sometimes religious friends and neighbors will come to you and they will begin questioning certain things that you believe, and you say, I'm confident, or I have assurance, or I accept this matter here that God has promised certain things. on the condition that I meet those requirements that He has set forth in His Word. And that person may say, well, I believe that all that is necessary is that a person believe that God is going to save him. And if you don't accept that premise, so many times the response is, but don't you trust God? Well, there's the difference. There's the problem area. Many times people say that they trust God, and in reality, they are trusting in a falsehood, trusting a lie. But this matter of believing certain information, there's a difference in just being able to believe certain facts and then that which translates into the relationship that the New Testament so frequently uses the expression believing in the Lord and receiving the blessings that God has promised. Here's where the element of trust enters into the picture. The illustration that I wanted to talk with you just a minute about was a lesson on skydiving. Have you ever gone skydiving? Well, Greg is missing tonight, and so we can count him off. He probably would say, well, I've tried that too. But the writer of this particular article was talking about how people can go through the process of being trained to jump out of an airplane. And the equipment that is necessary, all of this can be spread out, and the instructor go through all the matter there about the equipment that is to be used and how one is to react as he leaves the airplane, comes to the ground. That equipment can be shown to be the very best, that it's absolutely safe beyond any doubt. All this information that would go into trying to give the person the proper knowledge that would enable that person to be successful in jumping out of an airplane. But it goes on, though, and he says that all of that is well and good, but there comes a moment in which a person has to stand at that open door of the airplane and jump. And a great number refuse to do it. Even in the military, there are those that, under some pretty serious penalties, if they don't do it, have problems in dealing with that matter of jumping. Oh, it's a matter of they're convinced of the truth, of the safety that's involved in everything, but something is missing there. I believe we can transfer that illustration to this matter concerning our relationship with God. There has to come a particular moment as one stands in the door of that airplane when he has to take a step. It's a commitment that he has to make. He has to put, what he believes into practice. He has to show that trust that he has in those things. And until he reaches that point, it's all just a matter of academics. Someone has said that knowledge promotes understanding, but it does not guarantee courage. Practice on the ground, in the case of the skydiver, can give a person confidence in his equipment, but it doesn't give him trust when the time comes to put it into practice. So eventually, he has to decide that he will take that step. Our trust in God involves a similar process. There's a determination to believe God and to take action that God requires when, from all appearance, what God requires is contrary to our natural instincts or what we've been taught all our life is just something that you don't do. Now, we don't necessarily have all of the answers to situations that may arise, but one who trusts doesn't have to have all the answers. He doesn't is not required to know how God is going to do all these things. Illustration from the Old Testament. And as Paul records it in the book of Romans in the 4th chapter, the case of Abraham. Promises that God made to Abraham that he was going to bless him, he was going to make a great nation of him, and that through his seed, one descendant, he was going to bless all nations of the world. Now, there was a number of years that went by after God made that promise to Abraham that he was going to make this great nation from him, and Abraham and his wife had no child. Eventually, there was a question that came up with Abraham and Sarah. And they decided, as one fellow says, to try to help God out of the difficulty. The story of the handmaiden and Ishmael being born. But God says, no, that's not what I meant. I didn't mean that a child was going to be born in your family, or in your household, rather. But Sarah is going to have a child. Can you imagine what would go through the mind of Abraham? He says, I'm already 100 years old. Sarah is past the age of having a child. How can this be? But Paul says concerning Abraham in the 4th chapter of the book of Romans, and he's using this particular illustration to show that if a person today is going to be blessed by God, he will be blessed upon the same principles as was Abraham. Those who walk in the steps of faithful Abraham, as he notices here. But here concerning Abraham in the 20th verse beginning, he did not waver at the promise of God through unbelief, but was strengthened in faith, giving glory to God, and being fully convinced that what he had promised he was also able to perform. Therefore, it was accounted to him for righteousness. Now it was not written for his sake alone that it was imputed to him, but also for us it shall be imputed to us who believe in him who raised up Jesus our Lord from the dead, who was delivered up because of our offenses and was raised because of our justification, or for our justification, as some of the translations would read. So Paul is saying that that same one that gave Abraham the son, the same principle that God dealt with him, that kind of belief, and, well, earlier there in the chapter, it says that God was the one, when he made this promise to Abraham, he called things that were not as though they already were. God has the ability to do that because of who he is, because of his power. But man's part, Abraham's part there, was to accept what God said he was going to do and let that be as if it had already taken place. made a comment this morning in the study out at Simco that back World War One, I guess it was, the Germans, German army, would go in and they would destroy a city. And then their soldiers would go in and occupy that city, and they would sing songs of victory. We've overcome. We've been victorious. There's an account that is given back over in the Old Testament of where David gives instructions, or maybe Moses gives instructions, concerning a battle that was to take place. And instructions were given to certain men that they were to go before the army, before the battle took place, and they were to sing the songs that victory was accomplished because of God and the faithfulness of God. You see, the difference in one is when people had already accomplished it, the battle that they had fought, the other, God is going to overthrow the enemy. There's a very interesting story also in the Old Testament. In the book of 2 Kings in chapter 18, we read the story of King Hezekiah. Hezekiah had a very wicked father, had a very wicked son as well. But Hezekiah is mentioned as one of the great kings of the southern tribe of Judah. And the statement is made concerning Hezekiah that there had never been of the kings one like him, either before or after. Well, what did he mean that there had never been one before or like him, before or after? It says he trusted in God. He believed God when his, as we might say, when he was up against the wall with nowhere to turn. The 18th chapter of 2 Kings talks about the battles that were taking place as the king of Assyria come into great power, and he had conquered nations all over everywhere. And no nation had been able to stand up against him. And so one of the chief military men of the army of Assyria comes down and he engages some of the people there of King Hezekiah. He says, there's no need of you people trying to resist us. Look at all these nations round about and what the king had been able to do, Sennacherib, as he had been able just to overthrow every nation. He says, you can't stand. And don't you let King Hezekiah try to convince you that you will escape by saying, we trust in the Lord. That's, he says, is a lie. The Lord's not going to save you. Well, there's some lessons that we learned there. King Hezekiah was trying to persuade those people, God's going to save us if we put our trust in him. And the story that takes place there is that eventually they were spared. But that's one of the reasons that Hezekiah was considered to be such a great king, because he believed when even there was, as we say, no reason from a physical standpoint to believe that God was going to, or that they were going to be able to escape the Assyrian king. He trusted in God. Because when the threats were made, statement is that Hezekiah took this and he laid it out before the Lord. We might get the picture there of maybe taking a scroll or something like this, perhaps that had been sent from the Assyrian king with his threats and said, here's what we're going to do. So Hezekiah just says, God, you look at this. And we've tried to serve you. And we believe that if you want to deliver us, you're able to do it. So the Lord hearkened. He listened to what Hezekiah had to say. There are so many different areas, and this would be another lesson within itself, where we might make some practical application. Do we really trust God? When it has to do with material things, when the world round about us is so overcome with worry and anxieties and about all these things that are taking place so far as our physical well-being is concerned, do we trust God to provide for us? He says, I have never forsaken you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. And that's the promise that he's made. Are we willing to accept it? When it has to do with so many of the different things, sometimes the song that's used here, the battle belongs to the Lord. There's a great lesson in that. To believe that the battle does belong to them, that it will be one that can be overcome. One of the problems with trust, or where men have failure to trust God, the writer in Proverbs says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. Human reasoning. Person thinking that he might be able to, on his own, accomplish something. We were eating last night, and the TV was on back down the way, and there were some fellows trying to ride some of these rodeo bulls. And I said to Alan, how does that illustrate what we're going to be talking about? Well, there's no way that I could consider the matter of having the physical strength and ability to get on the back of one of those 1,800, 2,000-pound critters and stay. But if I had the ability, I can do it. And I might be able to get on there and stay. That's looking at it from what I can do, not what the Lord promised to do. When it comes to a matter of our relationship to God and the matter of salvation, God has made some exceeding great and precious promises. Paul writes concerning this matter, and he says that by these we might become partakers of the divine nature. Peter's the one that said that rather than Paul. That those promises that God has made, and when men meet the conditions. But as we suggested before, men oftentimes have been taught that they can receive the promises of God before they meet the conditions that God has set forth. They don't really believe. They really do not have the trust. One of the things that I remember so well from a number of years ago, we were living out in western Arkansas, Fort Smith. There's a woman that was a member of the congregation there, a very fine woman. You could just always depend on her being at worship services. Never did see her husband. And she would talk about him, and he'd say, he's a good fellow, but he just doesn't have any interest in spiritual matters. Always when they had a couple of boys, they were growing up, he said, he was always having something to do with them on Sunday to have them away from where they would be able to attend worship services. Says he's always treated her right, things of that nature, but he just never had any interest in spiritual things. Well, we had been over this in family, in this area, went back home. There was a call on our telephone from this woman. She says, Rex is in the hospital. He has cancer. I go up to meet him. I walk into the room and he immediately says, I know why you're here. I said, you do? Yes. You're here to get me in her church. I said, no. You're not. Well, no, because she doesn't have a church. I said, if you're talking about the fact that I want to talk with you about being obedient to the gospel, yes, but not in that sense. We talked, and this goes on now for some time. He would say, I've always wanted to believe. What he was talking about was trusting. And he says, I just can't do it. He says, I can believe there was a man by the name of George Washington. I believe he was the first president of the United States, all this. And I said, how do you do that? Well, men who lived during his time, they wrote about him. I said, well, we've got the information of men that saw all these things that Jesus did. I just can't believe. I said, I think I know why you're making that statement. He says, why? I said, well, because George Washington doesn't require anything of you. It's just facts. But Jesus requires something of you. To obey it. To trust him and obey it. This fellow was a fellow that was just scared to death of storms, tornadoes. If you know anything about western Oklahoma and or eastern Oklahoma and western Arkansas, it's worse than Alabama so far as tornadoes are concerned. And so this fella, I said, what would happen if you were to go in there and turn your TV on and the weather forecaster was there? He was just jumping up and down. He says, folks, there's a tornado coming. I said, it's coming from eastern Oklahoma across the river into western Arkansas. He says he's got a map drawn out and he's going to come right through the middle of your living room. I said, what would you do? He says, I'd take off running just as fast as I could. I said, why? He says, well, that fellow knows what he's talking about. I said, well, there's a book that knows what it's talking about. It tells of a greater destruction than that. And you can believe it. Well, anyway, his point was that he just couldn't see the point in obedience and trust in what God says. And that matter of his failure along that line. He just couldn't do it. One day in the hospital, just couple of weeks before he died, he told me, he says, well, said, I want to tell you, I appreciate you coming talking with me. He says, there's not any need of you coming back anymore. He says, I just can't understand what you're talking about here. He says, I've always wanted to see the light. He says, you know, it's just like that old song, Hank Williams, I saw the light. He said, you want to see the light, he says, more than anything else in the world. I walked over to his bedside and pulled the drawer open to a little desk. It still had Gideon Bibles. Though it was a Catholic hospital. I pulled the Bible out and I opened it up and I showed where the Old Testament talked about Christ as being the light that was to come. and how Paul, as he was told that he was to be a light to the Gentiles, I said, it's just a matter of making the light known, the truth known. Talked with him maybe 5 minutes or so, and you could see that it's just a completely different response on his face. He says, well, I don't want to get your hopes up. He says, either your preaching is getting better or I'm listening better. Well, to make the story short, ended. After he went home immediately, a day or two after that, I went out and talked with him again. And he says, I want to do what the Bible teaches. But he says, I've just gone too far. I can't do it. I said, listen, there's ways in which that can take place. So he went over to the, took him over to the church building, put him in a straight chair, and a couple of fellows picked him up and put him over into the baptistry, and I leaned him back and put him underwater. But his trust, I went back a day or two after that, there'd been a storm, tornado that had gone through, and tremendous rain. And I asked him about that, and he said, called his wife's name, says, she got up sometime during the night and went to the bathroom, checking on the weather, and the storm and everything, and says, I didn't even hear it go through. And he says, that's the first time he'd ever done that. Well, he didn't live but a couple of weeks, but that's taking more time than we should. Do you trust the Lord? Do you trust His guidance? And one of the songs talked about that matter. The guidance of the Lord, His instructions. The things that are necessary for a person to accomplish the greatest life here upon this earth, as well as to have the hope of life eternal. And then, of course, the obedience to His will. He has made the promises. Do you trust that He will do what He says He will do? There may be those here this evening that need to render obedience to the gospel. Declare your trust in God by being obedient.